welcome to Dacom Digital. It's time to listen to the latest crypto and DeFi market integrity news and enlightening interviews with industry thought leaders.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dacom Digital, where we give the stage to the builders, movers, and shakers of a safe and regulated crypto ecosystem. This is a quick response episode following the SEC's rejections in the past week of both Grayscale's and Bitwise's most recent ETF applications. And I have the absolute privilege of having as a guest today, Leah Wald, co-founder and CEO of Valkyrie, one of the first funds to offer futures Bitcoin ETF, to talk a little bit about the rejections, what they mean, and what the industry can do to change that. Welcome, Leah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolute pleasure is mine. I personally feel that you're one of the most inspiring leaders that I've got the chance to see doing amazing things in the regulated crypto space over the past few years. I'd love to maybe get started just with you telling us a little bit about yourself, your journey into crypto, and of course, Valkyrie's story.
Thank you so much, Chen. And for everybody that may not know, Valkyrie and Solidus Labs have been friends since really the origin stories of Valkyrie, the very early days. So it is a real honor to be on today.
Blushing on all sides here.
Exactly. So my story into crypto really from a full-time professional standpoint was around 2016. I had been following it for a while, having worked in the remittance space in international development. But 2016, I teamed up with Tyler Jenks, and we were involved with really the expansion of Lucid Investment Strategies, which was at the time, especially in 2017, the expert in trading and investing in GBTC as a security for our discretionary clients. So we were a registered investment advisory. After that, I then went into co-founding Valkyrie with Stephen McClurg, which has been an amazing journey. And actually, our origin stories of raising seed capital were to create a Bitcoin trust that would go head to head with GBTC. The issue was that when we saw that the Canadian ETFs were going to be approved, it was evident that a closed-end fund would fall into a discount. So we quickly pivoted. We threw our ETF hat in way back in January of 2021 and have been really launching different products ever since.
Okay, well, and you know, if anyone who's been reading crypto news have definitely seen your name. By the way, it's an awesome name for a Norse mythology and Marvel fan like myself. The logo I also love, by the way. So you know, you mentioned GBTC. Obviously, GBTC is a product that Grayscale offers that is not an ETF. In fact, there are many who would say that it was created exactly because an ETF was not doable when it was. Very, very popular. I think if I remember from the numbers I read earlier today, almost, what was it, 13 billion under, you know, already invested through that instrument. But of course, a lot, you know, the kind of positioning of that changed when the futures Bitcoin ETF was approved. You've alluded to that. And you guys have actually been able to offer one of the first Bitcoin futures ETF, right? You know, the week it was approved, you already had a product that was approved in the market. Obviously, a lot of people asked then and still ask, why futures Bitcoin ETF, yes, and not a Bitcoin spot ETF. So could you elaborate a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have also filed for a Bitcoin spot ETF. I do think that is the holy grail, but we are still a long time away from that. I know that all of us in crypto don't like hearing that. So I'm always the big bad wolf for saying that. But Bitcoin futures ETF, there was a lot of writing on the wall that was explicit by Chairman Gensler at the time. He said almost specifically that he's comfortable with a 40 act structure with CME traded Bitcoin futures. So it was very explicit of what the SEC was actually comfortable in seeing. So that's why we structured our product accordingly. The issue is that Bitcoin is still an unregulated product, and so when you look at the futures, that is on a regulated exchange. Unfortunately, Chairman Gensler has also said that He wants to see exchanges register with the SEC before he's comfortable approving a Bitcoin spot ETF. To date, no exchanges have gone forth and wanted to register with the SEC. So unfortunately, you know, we can't see a future of a Bitcoin spot ETF happening anytime soon until we see the forward progress of the exchanges also trying to register with the SEC.
Right. That's super helpful. And, you know, obviously we're a crypto risk monitoring company, and specifically market surveillance is one of our core capabilities. You know, I think that at this point I've read every single Bitcoin ETF rule change proposal since I've joined the industry. So late 2017, there were many before as well, but we're talking about dozens. And to be clear, I'm not a lawyer, but we do work very closely on market integrity in crypto. You know, in fact, one of the reasons we founded Solidus was actually, when we founded Solidus, we decided to focus on market manipulation and market surveillance was the ETF, repeated ETF Bitcoin rejections. Now, I'm going to explain it to the best I can, like what I understand from the rejections. But if I'm mansplaining anything wrong, please do jump in and correct me. You know, what's really interesting about reading the rejection documents is that there are basically two main things that the SEC is concerned about, you know, repeatedly. One of them is custody. And I think it's fair to say that custody is being gradually resolved with a lot of traditional actors stepping in and more products. The other piece, which is very interesting for us, is, of course, the question of market manipulation and how do you prevent it, especially in a cross-market reality through shared surveillance agreements. If I very briefly kind of, you know, summarize it in simple terms, you know, if you think about, you know, Bitcoin created a new reality, crypto created a new reality where you have assets, the first non-physical assets that are not native to any single exchange. If you think of a regular stock, Apple, GM, they're traded in one exchange. All of the original asset is traded in one exchange, heavily regulated exchange, I might add. And, you know, if someone tries to manipulate it, there's much more ability to control it. In the case that Bitcoin is completely different, right? Because it's not native to a single exchange. In fact, anyone who wants to can open an exchange and start trading it. And really what the SEC is saying is let's say that the ETF is approved and is traded in SIBO or NYSE, a fully regulated entity. Let's even say that we have 5 exchanges that we can take prices from that are registered with the SEC. That's obviously a big part of the problem. Fully regulated here in the US, even in New York, which, you know, is probably the most stringent with crypto regulation. What about the thousands of other places where Bitcoin is traded? How do we know that someone doesn't, you know, that 6 whale wallets that own a lot of Bitcoin are not colluding, building bots? And again, I'm exaggerating here, kind of like with the worst case scenario that I believe is on their mind, creating hundreds of bots that are making tens of thousands of transactions that are affecting Bitcoin's price, and therefore through the ETF directly affecting, American regulated markets. And I'll just add to that, especially after what happened with Terra, where there was a blockchain ecosystem with very limited risk monitoring, complete uncharted territory, and you have an instance where it collapses, leading to billions in losses that actually did affect, one could say, you know, the general market beyond crypto, right? And had a role in kind of driving us to the down markets right now. So first of all, I'll just ask you, it was a bit of a long explanation, but was that a fair way of describing their concerns? Or do you understand it differently?
No, I think that you're absolutely right. And until more recently, when Chairman Gensler became appointed at the SEC, that was the concerns of the regulators at the SEC. It was market manipulation was the primary, custody was also always highlighted. So I think you're absolutely correct. And that's why I think Solidus Labs is so important to be able to analyze what's going on here and, you know, also provide recommendations to clean this up. I think that the system hasn't changed too much. I do think that institutional players have created a little bit better solutions, and that's true, but there definitely are still concerns in DC about those same issues. And I think that some of them are definitely founded And that's why I think, to your point, it's important that Bitcoin be on a regulated exchange, and therefore packaged in a way that we actually can monitor more closely and more accurately.
Right. But you know, there is, of course, a very strong counter argument. I'm actually often in the minority opinion when I say this in the industry, because, first of all, there are other assets that are not native to single exchanges, commodities, gold, et cetera, and they're very, very good, reliable markets, or at least considered. So at the same time, also, the market has evolved dramatically. I mean, we can say that from our work in terms of the integrity of volumes, how serious the big exchanges where most of the volume is are taking market surveillance. And also, it has been approved in other places. So, I mean, I'm curious, where do you find yourself in that debate? Because obviously, we all want it to be approved. But a lot of people just say the SEC is just being overprotective. It's an overreach. There's a political element to it as well, right? Like, to what is the right level for a regulator to be involved? So I'm curious where, and you guys actually create those and are actually over there on the front with the SEC explaining the product. Do you feel that the counter argument is strong? I mean, would you pick a side? You don't have to. I don't mean to put you on the spotlight here, but I'm just curious, what are your thoughts when we also consider those counter arguments?
Yeah, I would actually tend to agree. I think that there are enough investor protections. I do think there's enough market surveillance firms such as Solidus Labs. I do also think that we can take precedent from the other exchanges around the world that are trading successfully Bitcoin spot ETFs, whether Canada, Brazil, many countries, as well as other pioneering countries that traded, you know, Bitcoin spot ETPs even earlier. So I do think that from that perspective, there's a lot of takeaways that the SEC can have of how to do it successfully. Additionally, we do think that the Howey test and other regulations can also stand up to be able to understand this asset. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, we do think that there is a correct understanding in DC that there is still a lot of manipulation happening, that they're still trying to get comfortable with it. And until they're comfortable, it makes sense that a product shouldn't be out there that they're not comfortable with, that they don't fully understand quite yet. So until that happens, we definitely want to collaborate with them and get them to that comfortable place. But we do think that there's examples out there that already set precedent that provide that opportunity for the United States and the SEC to get comfortable more quickly and hopefully approve a spot Bitcoin ETF on the sooner end.
Right. And of course, this question of when is it going to be approved is one of the first questions I always get asked. I have no doubt that you do too. You know, I also think that it's that, you know, people also often say often, you know, the US is behind, but it's also important to remember that you can't really compare American capital markets to any other ecosystem in the world. And, you know, you could explain it in different ways, but the bottom line is that there's more to protect here in a way than in other places. And also, that's actually something that, you know, Brian Brooks once told me that, you know, and also at the end of the day, the US in a way has a monopoly over capital markets, because once it is approved, a lot of money is going to flow here, whether it happens now, in a year, in a few years. And I, in that sense, I kind of, I think that's part of the reason why, you know, obviously there's a lot of pressure, but they're also letting themselves take their time to make sure they feel comfortable. But I do want to ask you, you know, again, this question of when is an ETF being approved is probably one of the most popular questions in the industry for years now. I think that's not the relevant question. It's interesting, but it's not the relevant question. The real question is not when, but what. What can we do as an industry to make it more likely? And I think there are few people more equipped than you to answer that question, because you're on the front line over there. What do you think we can do? You know, what does anyone in the crypto industry that wants to see this approved can do today, tomorrow, and in the coming years to bring it closer?
Great question. I think what's also really important is that Grayscale starts providing more transparency. I think that most of us in the industry need to collaborate more with DC. However, the lack of transparency that has always existed from Grayscale into GBTC has been egregious. And there's no ability for the SEC to be able to be comfortable with a Bitcoin spot ETF while there's a product out there that does hurt investors. with a parent company who seemingly is not interested in their investors and supporting shareholder value. You have a product that is still trading at, you know, that still has a management fee of 2%, a higher expense ratio, and seemingly no desire to even lower that during this time of high discounts and other structural issues. There could have been an ability for GBTC to trade closer at NAV. However, they seemingly weren't that interested in trying to fill the gap previously. Now I think that they're in a lot of trouble, and that's very evidenced by what's happening now with them, you know, coming to the SEC with a lawsuit. However, again, I don't think Bitcoin spot ETF is going to be approved until, again, there's less concern around what will happen when the GBTC does get converted into an ETF and what that will look like for the retail investors. As we know, institutional sophisticated investors have often been investing in GBTC because of that traditional ARB play, but that is not the case with retail investors. And if the SEC is concerned about investor protections for the retail market, then much needs to be understood here. And Grayscale should not be so combative and aggressive, but instead needs to actually be collaborative and supportive. And that's obviously not the case. So I personally believe that until Grayscale starts changing their tune, which seemingly they will not, the SEC is going to be a bit hamstrung. I think that there's other things the rest of us can do as well that Solidus Labs is taking, you know, a huge step on, of just providing more data, helping the regulators understand that this market can be understood. Now, there's always going to be concerns around manipulation, to your point, because you can trade this asset on exchanges all around the world. It is decentralized. You can have multiple wallets. Sometimes it's difficult to see. There are bots trading, lots of things like that. However, as we also know, you can decipher Bitcoin with both fundamental and technical analysis like any other asset in the world. There may be nuances. It may be a different animal in certain ways. But like any other asset in history, it actually can be understood with the same tools and toolkit that we have for other traditional market assets, whether it's sister precious metals that are thinly traded and manipulated. Why would we see this as any different? So to be honest, I think that, again, for other folks interested in proving market integrity, it's just going to take a lot of us putting out research and holding open forums and being as collaborative as we can while the regulators try to understand this animal a little bit better and realize that it is an asset like any others and can be regulated in a similar way.
I mean, thank you. You raised so many great points that I want to speak to, but I usually talk too much, so I'll try to keep to the most important stuff. I mean, but it's interesting because obviously when we think about it from a very technical perspective, right? When I look at the SEC's rejection documents, another point that is made there quite clearly is that in traditional market, this concern about assets that can be manipulated cross market has been addressed through shared surveillance agreements. That could be something like the intermarket surveillance group in securities markets, where basically if you, and by the way, again, correct me if I'm misrepresenting anything, but basically if you want to trade a derivative of a stock that is not native to the US, there needs to be an agreement sharing trading data between the foreign exchange and the local derivatives exchange, so that if something happens, you have all the data in one place, you can cross-surveil and see whether someone was doing anything that isn't kosher. But what they're saying is they don't understand, it quite literally says in the rejection documents, they don't understand how similar surveillance sharing agreement can be created in crypto because it's so decentralized. Now, it's, you know, interestingly enough, that's, we actually have that capability and we work with certain regulators in other parts of the world on, you know, that have a group of licensed exchanges, and, you know, want to cross surveil, but it is a very interesting point because the reality is that no one is ever going to be able to surveil every single Bitcoin trade. First of all, anyone, as I mentioned earlier, anyone can trade it. Second of all, another complication there, let's say if theoretically all of Bitcoin trading was decentralized and happened on a blockchain, all of the data was public. But the reality is that while the asset is centralized, the The trading is centralized. The asset is decentralized. About 90% of it is still traded in centralized exchanges. Those are black boxes from the perspective of a blockchain. So it creates a lot of challenges. You know, I personally believe that one of the keys there is to start drawing lines in the sand where you have groups of exchanges that are very committed to providing market integrity, to demonstrating it. They have surveillance system. Over time, we're working, you know, through our Crypto Market Integrity Coalition on creating, you know, enough trust to share that sort of data. And you would have those that are not. And, you know, the ones that are willing to provide more transparency will be regulated. Most of the institutional money is going to go there. And there are going to be parts of the market that are less regulated, very similar to traditional finance. Again, and it's obviously a process and something that would take time. But anyway, I'm just kind of curious on for your take on that, for your take on my take, if I may.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that comes back to Chairman Gensler's point that they're not going to be comfortable approving a Bitcoin spot ETF until exchanges come to the table and register with the SEC. I do think that you are right. That again, when it comes to exchanges and centralized exchanges, it becomes a black box. However, I think that that doesn't have to be the case. And as we've seen with other exchanges and other commodities who then trade on the futures market, as one example, you are able to track when it is actually trading on those exchanges. So I think that utilizing those types of contracts that you're speaking about, I think that that's exactly a way that regulators can get comfortable with this asset and specifically the ETF wrapper. Now, I think that brings up a greater point that perhaps DC won't be comfortable with Bitcoin, the asset, for a while. However, perhaps they can get more comfortable with Bitcoin on regulated exchange wrapped up in a traditional market vehicle being an ETF.
Really interesting. Honestly, I'm super curious. I would have loved to be a fly on the wall in your strategy meetings and to think about the different ways you're approaching, you know, packaging these things in ways that would be good for consumers and acceptable for the SEC. But I won't ask you for all of your strategy right here and now. We speak with regulators all the time, and one of the things that's most important for me to convey is just how much commitment there is in the industry to improve this. The industry is not what it was for 3, 4, even 2 years ago. You won't hear, as you used to, you know, 2-3 years ago, CEOs of major exchanges saying crypto traders don't care about manipulation anymore. We can also, you know, in markets where we have visibility, we literally see the trends in terms of less of the kind of like wholesale wash trading and spoofing and pump and dump that we used to see. It's a very different market. I'm curious to ask you, if it's okay, by the way, I hope I'm not being too, I'm not prying too much here, but when you're thinking about your products, how do you think about sourcing pricing? I mean, is there, you know, are there, you know, when you look at the different exchanges or do you have any specific criteria? I mean, in terms of, you know, is that an angle that you take when you try to make a more compelling argument from the regulator's perspective in favor of an ETF?
That's a very interesting question and definitely something that actually needs to be recorded in the documents and in the prospectus, not just for the ETF applications, but also for private trusts, et cetera. Where are you getting the pricing to strike your NAV? So I do think that you bring up a very good point. Very interesting point as well, maybe for listeners here, is what is the correct pricing mechanism in order to ensure that we're all on the same standard? Because not only should Valkyrie be very heavily interested in finding accurate and non-manipulated pricing data, but everyone should be held to the same standard as it is in traditional finance. I don't think that that's there yet. In that we are not all collaborating and we're not stuck to using one pricing data mechanism yet. However, maybe you bring up a point of opportunity for regulators to get more comfortable, which is perhaps we do need to all use one standard pricing data source.
Yeah, no, all of this is fascinating. And that's part of why crypto is such a fascinating industry, because it's really an opportunity, you know, it introduces such dramatic changes to the fundamental ways, and that's true in centralized crypto and even more so in DeFi, that we all have to reconsider the best way to do things that have been pretty set for sometimes decades, you know, whether it's the Howey test, whether it's SWIFT from the 70s of, you know, which is still the foundation for how we transfer money internationally. And yes, things like what's the right way to price, you know, to source pricing for products like this. But anyway, it's really interesting to hear your perspective on it. We're getting towards a conclusion, but I do want to ask you if there's anything exciting or we should be expecting from Valkyrie or, you know, just kind of what's on your roadmap for the next few months that we should look out to for?
Great question. We are always scheming up important products. I think that maybe what's interesting to me about the mad scientists in our house is that it's always important to pivot your products based on what regulators are comfortable and not comfortable with. Obviously, there's a big issue with DeFi right now. And working with stable coins. So many companies out there that was very interested in, and we were taking a pulse on that wanted to launch stablecoin funds, yielding stablecoin funds, even targeting insurance companies, which is a very interesting play, have now been pretty blown out of the water. So I think that what's interesting is I think that we have very interesting funds and products that are about to come out. However, they often need to pivot quite quickly before we actually usher them out the door. So there's a lot of legal scrutiny. There's a lot of compliance scrutiny in-house that we do. However, it is interesting to me how this industry moves so quickly, where, as we often say, as you know, 3 months in crypto is like a year in traditional finance. Products need to be shipped accordingly as well and modified accordingly as well. So many of our funds have also been modified based on regulations that not only are coming out, but that we think will be coming out in the future. So a lot of fun stuff coming up, a lot of fun stuff that is based on what we are learning from Washington and also from the industry, and ensuring that our risk management parameters are very solid and in place so that our funds are representing what is actually fair, safe, transparent, and also interesting to investors.
Hey, the potential is too great to make the world better to not keep on trying. And again, I'm just constantly inspired speaking to, you know, heroes like you who are doing everything they can to enable the potential of crypto. We do our best to mitigate the risks to enable that potential, and you're constantly putting out innovative products. Anyway, Leah, we usually try to aim for 20 minutes. This was just too interesting, so I couldn't let you go yet. But before you go, just I hope it's okay to say congratulations on your new baby, Mazel Tov, as they say. It's good to have you back from maternity leave. A huge congratulations and thank you so much. I look forward to continue collaborating and to have you again soon, if you'd like.
Thank you so much for having me as well.
Our pleasure.
This episode of DACOM Digital was brought to you by Solidus Labs. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe and be sure to join the conversation by following us on LinkedIn and Twitter.